Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. When it comes to treating patients with Alzheimer's disease or other forms of dementia, should caregivers be doing more to address the person and not just the disease? How does stigma and a lack of understanding about effective treatment for patients with dementia impact the patient's quality of life? And what roles can art therapy play in affirming one's self-awareness and sense of identity? Our guest for the remainder of the hour unpacks all of these concepts and questions in her recently published editorial in the Journal of Neurology and Neurological Disorders titled Identity and Memory, Ascertaining Consciousness Beyond Dementia. Exploring these concepts and asking these questions becomes increasingly important given the cost of care and treatment, the limited funding we put toward researching diseases like Alzheimer's, and the alarming increase of persons being diagnosed with the disease. Across the globe, an estimated 50 million people are living with Alzheimer's, and as people 65 and older make up the largest age demographic, that number is on the rise. Joining me now to discuss her publication is Angel Duncan. Angel is an art therapist and director of education at the Neuropsychiatric Research Center of Southwest Florida. She's also a licensed marriage and family therapist and currently a PhD candidate. And warning, shameless plug, she's also been a guest on the podcast from WGCU's own Mike Canary and Richard Cinque, Three Song Stories. Angel Duncan, welcome back to the studio. Always great to connect with you.
It's so great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
And I invite listeners to join the conversation as well. Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. And I kind of wanted to delve just right into this piece that you've written here and first just ask, you know, based on your experiences and the work that you do, you know, what motivated you to write this? Because you don't exactly have a lot of free time.
This is part of my passion and my life, actually. I've been in the field for 17 years and working in Northern California, New Jersey, New York City, down here in Florida, work all over the country. And it's something that I continually see, not just here, but all over the nation and beyond, is the stigma that happens with people when they get diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease or related dementia. And it just prompted me that we've got to do something about it. And if that means just putting it out there in words and capturing just somebody's attention, then that's it. I just wanted to contribute some way and to get people talking.
Yeah. Early on in the piece, you kind of start off a bit talking about people who have maybe recently been diagnosed and have not yet begun to experience perhaps some of the more pronounced cognitive symptoms and sort of the psychological – I don't think trauma is necessarily the right word, but how they react to it and how fear of losing your memory – people already start to associate that with fear of losing their own identity.
Yeah, it's huge. And that's why I've always been fascinated, just because in my own therapy groups and individual counseling, we work with people that just got diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment, or they get early onset or early stage Alzheimer's disease, and you're terrified. And I would hear the same things. What's going to become of me without my memories? Who am I without my mind? And that's when I got interested, is wondering, well, are our memories a part of our identity? Mm-hmm. Or are we more than that? So in the very early beginning signs, people are fearful and terrified because they are equating memory to their identity. And that's where art therapy and even with talk therapy can be very helpful. And to get kind of these energies of this fear and anxiety inside and getting it out and having somebody to talk to professionally in art, music, the expressive arts is a part of medicine. Yeah. And it is a part of therapy. So it helps people to come to some type of resolution.
And, you know, as cognitive symptoms do become worse, you know, this also, of course, has an impact on close family members and friends and you know, spouses, people who often are going to become the caregivers. Is that something that you see a lot in your line of work too? You know, not just the concerns of the patient, but the concerns of those in their lives.
Yeah, caregiver stress is another it's a crisis. This disease is a crisis. It's a national, universal crisis. And caregivers are, because especially down here where we have people that are newly retired or trying to enjoy their retirement years, now they've taken a different road. And I can't tell you how many times I say, this is, I didn't sign up for this. We were supposed to go on our cruises. We were supposed to do these things, you know, and have a life, and now we don't. Yeah. And they can. And it's a matter of just having the right education and the right support. And that's the big thing, is having support to support not only those that are living with it, but the caregivers, because caregiver stress is just as a crisis in getting them the support that they need.
There's a term you use in the piece, malignant social psychology, and how it seems to pervade the medical care community. Can you touch on that?
That's a lot of loaded questions.
I know.
It's just being dismissive. It's being dismissive of the disease and not really paying attention to – it's like, you know, you're focusing on the body. You're not focusing on the person. Psychology is a part of humanity. It's who we are. We need to be focusing on what's going on mentally as well as physically and combining that.
And, you know, this piece, to me, it really serves – it sounds like it serves as a call to action as much as it is to educate.
Absolutely.
In your experience, are art therapists generally underutilized in treatment of patients?
Yes.
Another loaded question.
17 years I've been in the field. They are, because it's seen as a pastime and not taken seriously. Or you have people that think it's just art. I can do that. Anybody can do that. I actually had – I won't name who it was, but it was here in Fort Myers where I was working with a resident. And the director came out and said, I don't think we'll need you. I can do this on my own and I don't need to pay you. I don't even have to pay you. And at the same time, the CNA who was working with the resident started dictating, we need to put some yellow in there. You need to color this, and started dictating how to color it. And I'm just like, it broke my heart. I'm just like, yeah, you just keep going. You just keep thinking you can be an art therapist and do what I do. And people will say, we make it look easy. And it's, you know, it's like surfing. You watch surfing and you're like, oh, that looks so easy. I can do that. And then you can't even get up on the board. It's the same with art therapy. It's an education. It's a master and doctorate level education. We know what we're doing. And facilities don't want to pay. They're not taking it as seriously. The one place in Naples that I've been at for 5 years, Terracina Grande, has been phenomenal. They have really, really embraced the arts, music therapy, art therapy, and we need more people like that.
Well, let's highlight some of the case studies that you bring up in the piece. And there's one I'm thinking of, a woman that you're calling Melinda in the piece with a frontotemporal lobe dementia. And I guess just go ahead and tell me the story about what happened whenever art therapy became a part of her treatment.
Yeah, I've had the pleasure of working with her for 5 years now. And she's really progressed. She's got FTD, also known as Pick's disease. And now her memory is – it's usually more behavioral in the beginning, but her memory is starting to kind of go towards the end now. But she's she had an aide that was working with her, and I sat with her and painted, and she painted this apple tree. And I asked her, what would you call this? And she called it the lone apple tree. And I said, well, have you ever seen a tree like this before? So she started telling me this whole story. Yeah, my mother had an orchard, and she's talking about the apple pies, the cider her mom used to make. She wasn't as good as it. And then from that, she jumped into how she used to be a principal. And she didn't like being authoritarian and disciplining. She'd rather teach children. And then she talked about marriage. Did she marry the right person? She felt like she married too young. So this whole history of her life came out, and I document it. Well, the aide that had been working with her for about a year came over, and we were talking and discussing it, and she was engaged and getting married and had no idea. And she's like, I've been working with her for a year. I had no idea she knew any of this. And so that completely changed their dynamic. She started talking to her, and then in the woman, quote unquote, Melinda, you know, for confidentiality,
sure.
Was giving her advice. And it was like this – it was just a fascinating thing to watch. And I see that so many times where the nurse aides are the ones doing the bulk of the caring.
Yeah.
And let's face it, they're underpaid. They're burned out. They've got like 10 other people they're working with. But when you're changing the dynamics of that relationship as they're getting to know the people they're working for, not the symptoms, not the disease, the person, things start to change. And I see it all the time.
Yeah. How do you reach people who maybe are working in medical fields or clinical settings that don't necessarily specialize in the treatment of patients with dementia? Because just hypothetically, if I were directing an emergency department somewhere, I kind of feel like it would be much more important for me to make sure that my staff was up to date on advanced cardiovascular life support techniques,
right,
as opposed to being cognizant of the best ways to address somebody with dementia or Alzheimer's.
So, and that is a great question. Mm-hmm. It goes back to the education is a cornerstone, and anybody in the medical field, you don't have to specialize in anybody in medical field, needs to have an awareness, because what does it go back to? Psychology and cognition. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what you don't know. And then there's a difference, as we were talking earlier, about delirium or dementia. They're still trying to figure it out. But, you know, a good hospital system is going to have that kind of education. And there are good hospitals that do include that. You know, when I was in New Jersey, I was at Bellevue. They had me train every department about the disease and how to communicate, because that's the key, knowing how to communicate, to de-escalate when the person is agitated and disoriented and doesn't know what's going on. Same with our EMTs, firefighters. Everybody, you know, in the crisis emergency should have this. So it is a matter of reaching out to, you know, in these resources, places, you know, should start doing a little bit of a better job in reaching out to their local communities and doing these types of things. Every community. I mean, even like Publix. I was pleasantly surprised when I first moved here like 6 years ago that Publix had me come in and talk to their staff about the disease and how to communicate, because they were dealing with customers who were having issues and becoming argumentative and didn't understand. Now they understand.
Yeah. That's interesting. See, that's something I wouldn't even think about.
Yeah.
Well, can you tell me a bit about when you go into a facility and you're bringing these art therapy sessions and your expertise to the patients they're taking care of? Do you sometimes run into the problem of the other staff being like taking an attitude of, oh, well, Angel's here, so I can go take a break? And ideally, you would want them to engage as well.
Absolutely. And that does happen, where they start to see you as a babysitter. I mean, I have walked into a room when I was in San Francisco in the Bay Area. I came in and there were literally like 18 people, and they were lining them in and then trying to just dump them and leave me with them. And I was like, no, 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 no. And I put a stop. I'm not doing this. You're going to be helping me. And it did. And that was one time, and it was the only time it changed. And then they realized it was fun. They actually got to sit down and do. And I think what the aides also realize is, because a lot of time their schedule is busy, they're burning out, it gives them an opportunity to just find some calm and be with the person that they're with, that they're caring for, and connect with them. So I encourage them to create together, to talk to one another. And when I go out, I train different facilities all over the country how to do the arts, how to communicate effectively. I'll try to partner up an art therapist in community if I can. But I strongly encourage that. And that's families too. I love it when – especially children when they're coming in, because it's like they're terrified of coming to the – it's a dementia facility. I don't know what's wrong with grandpa. But then the art gives them a way. I can't tell you how many children would come in like 3 or 4 years old and they're running in there and sitting on grandpa's lap and they're both painting together.
Mm.
You know, and it's like – it's, you know, it gives them an opportunity to connect.
That's really interesting. I wish something like that had been around when I would go and visit my own great-grandmother, and she was suffering dementia, and sometimes older family members would be like, okay, you just hang out with her for a little
right.
bit. And I'm terrified because she thinks – she's calling me RJ. She thinks I'm my dad.
Yeah.
And we're going to go on the trolley and go downtown, and there's no trolley.
Yeah.
And that would have been – I think a really good thing. And is that something you encourage too? Because full disclosure, several years ago, I did have the pleasure of participating in an art therapy program here in Fort Myers with you. And I noticed a lot of the folks were there, you know, with their spouses or with their adult children.
Mm-hmm. And it gave them the opportunity to connect. I mean, I don't know if you remember this, but we had a couple that the wife painted a resort in North Carolina and said this was her favorite vacation spot. And the husband was like, I had no idea she remembered. Mm. And it gave them an opportunity to become husband and wife, not just I'm a care partner, caregiver. I'm this is my spouse, and this is, you know, gave them that opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, what you know, aside from writing pieces like this and just really appealing to the broader medical community and really anybody who can pick this up, and by the way, you can find a link to it on our website.
Thank you.
But given how little money is put towards Alzheimer's research compared to other diseases, how do you get people to try to support something like this?
It's advocacy. I mean, look at breast cancer.
Yeah.
You know, it's like everybody knows what the pink ribbon is and everybody supports it. and, you know, including the NFL. You see the football players and I'm like, well, you should have the purple ribbon on because that's Alzheimer's and that's what your own people are getting. So, you know, it really is lessening the stigma and a lot more advocacy and a lot more people to step up to the plate. And unfortunately, it's going to have to take somebody very, you know, like even Bill Gates is now involved, but it's not enough. I mean, it really is going to have to take the whole group to just step up and say we need to do more. Otherwise, it's only growing. It's going to continue to grow and we're only warehousing people. And it's like, you know, with Medicare and Medicaid and the funding in general for this is the most expensive disease. If you look at prostate, breast cancer, HIV, stroke, all those numbers are going down. Alzheimer's is continuing to escalate.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's wrong with our government. You know, they keep putting little drops in the bucket and they're excited about it, but they're only drops in the bucket in comparison. So it is just a matter of people caring enough to really get out there, advocate, educate, and get talking about it beyond yourselves, beyond a support group, more involved.
Tangentially related to your work in art therapy, you're also an accomplished actress. We were talking before about the work you just did with the South Florida Women's 1 Minute Play Festival. You're going to be in an upcoming production at the Alliance for the Arts with Theater Conspiracy. Is there a role for theater or drama in the art therapy world?
Absolutely. I had done an art therapy piece at the Alliance due to time constraints. It hasn't been easy, but and then theater, there's a lot of things you can do, you know, about the awareness, like, you know, the Laboratory Theater with Annette Troschbeck. She did a piece on Alzheimer's last year, The Autumn of Velocity, or Velocity of Autumn. I don't know if I'm dyslexic, but we sponsored it and we had a Q&A about Alzheimer's disease and she had sold out performances and people actually stayed after to talk about the disease. Yeah. So it reached out into more of a cultural community. So there's so much you can do in terms of, you know, having an art therapy display. When I was in the Bay Area, the YMCA post offices, even banks and investment places would hang up their artwork with a bio to show people and customers this is what's happening, this is what the disease is, and this is what's coming out of it.
Right. Well, that is unfortunately all the time we have for today's show, but thank you so much for joining us. Our guest has been Angel Duncan. She's an art therapist and director of education at the Neuropsychiatric Research Center of Southwest Florida. And you can find a link to her piece again that we've been discussing today in the Journal of Neurology and Neurological Disorders on our website. And our show today was produced by Mike Canary and yours truly. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Angel, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM.